I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive's fucked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my
Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of GamerCore. I am DK.
And just like U.S. casualties in Afghanistan, we are back.
Yes, and we're in fact recording today on the 20th anniversary of the Mossad false flag operation that plunged us into Clown World and now Hell Realm. So that's kind of funny. So we are back, and we wanted to maybe catch up on a little bit of news first in the gaming world, because there's been a couple interesting developments, starting with the CEO of Tripwire Interactive. To the extent that there's still a mid-size market that, like, I mean, because they're not EA or Activision, but, you know, they're still pretty big.
It's a double A. They don't do, like, heavy marketing pushes. They kind of, it's like a cult classic factory kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, and as, you know, not that it's like Oscar bait type games, but they're, you know, very, like, hardcore dedicated fan bases.
I think Red Orchestra in particular, Red Orchestra 2, I guess, is
also,
in particular.
Also, yeah, they make, like, the based games.
Yes.
A lot of based games are them.
I didn't realize they published Xenoclash. That was interesting.
They make a lot of, like, Evropin games, you know? Games you can bring to the IE meetup kind of games, you know?
Yeah, Europa with a V.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and Alex McNabb was on TDS yesterday, and Alex McNabb mentioned that he was a big fan of Killing Floor 2, especially for the Halloween updates, and they just developed a fairly, I think, well-regarded, I mean, Metacritic to be worth, their meta ratings tend to hover between, like, you know, 68 to 82 is, I guess, sort of like the range there. And Maneater, this, I haven't played it, but I saw there was a fairly broad push, and it was getting some press and interest generally, this kind of action RPG where you're a shark eating humans and stuff, which is kind of funny. I don't know, if it's $5 sale sometime, maybe worth checking out. I don't know. I never played it, or if it's free on the Epic Store or something. But so these are the guys who developed the Red Orchestra series, the Killing Floor series, Maneater, and published Xenoclash and Chivalry 2. And I think that was the most kind of we'll get into it. So I guess
Red Orchestra is pretty based.
Yes. I actually never played it, but I'm familiar, and I know there's a lot of our guys who really enjoy it.
I mean, World War II Arma is a pretty good, like...
Right, yeah. Like a realistic military simulator style World War II setting, multiplayer first-person shooter. Is there a campaign? My understanding is that it's pretty much multiplayer only. Is there any kind of campaign on Red Orchestra?
Pretty sure. They also... I think it's multiplayer only. I never heard of somebody playing.
Right.
But yeah, to the point. They don't do a lot of games. They also did a Winter War game, or it's in the works.
Oh, okay.
Which is, like, unfathomably based. Oh, no, never mind. That's the it's a community thing with in Red Orchestra. So it's like a mod thing. But anyway, that's not the point.
Yeah. So they're like a fair. Well, that, I guess it speaks to, like, their, you know, they're not making, like, walking simulators or. You know, whatever. This is a fairly niche, fairly.
I would say hardcore is the word. Like, they make hardcore games. Like,
yes.
You have to. These are games are, you know, kind of an inch wide, a mile deep. I think Maneater might be the exception. Maneater seems a little more, like, ton of mass appeal, but most of their games are have very deep combat systems that you have to like learn to enjoy. They're kind of somewhat unforgiving in a lot of ways. They're fun, but I'm not like a huge Tripwire Games guy, but I understand that like that's it's almost like kind of a genre unto its own.
Yeah, that definitely yes, I think you're right. Like sometimes like developers, it's like a the developer is the genre, and
they make
I think
like realism games. It's kind of like I would say like they try to mimic realism as much as they can in like certain ways, and they're more fantastical in certain games, but there's always like a deep. I would say it's one of the games that are unique for like the player has a ton of control over the avatar, whereas like you can interact with the world a ton of different ways. Instead of like Call of Duty being left trigger, right trigger, you can like touch every element of your gear in Red Orchestra. You know, like taking off bayonets like in game. Your avatar has a lot of you have a lot of control of your avatar in Tripwire games, whereas not so much in standard genre games.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I actually can't say definitely because I'm familiar. Again, I'm familiar with Red Orchestra from you know people who have told me about it and you know seeing it, but I haven't played it myself. It would be Anike said he wanted to do an episode of NIGR on it, and I think that would be fun, but I just couldn't speak to it from a perspective of having played it.
I think my Tripwire game, or it's not. I think Tripwire didn't, but they kind of I think they publish it because it's like once again like their genre. I play the Chivalry games a good bit.
Yeah, and Chivalry. Well, so I guess maybe to bring it back. So the CEO, CEO founder, and president. I don't think he's not listed on the Wikipedia page as a founder. It wouldn't surprise me if he were. I don't know if he is for sure. Do you know if he was?
No, but he talked like one. If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I get the sense he's been there pretty much from the beginning. He writes on September 4th. Quote, proud of hashtag U.S. Supreme Court affirming the Texas law banning abortion for babies with a heartbeat. As an entertainer, I don't get political often, yet with so many vocal peers on the other side of this issue, I felt it was important to go on the record as a pro-life game developer. And not only pro-life, but I have an article from the Christian Post that, without any kind of specific, but it would make sense, basically identifies him as a Christian, the headline is Christian CEO of video game developer steps down amid backlash to support for Texas abortion law. And that was how this saga ended, kind of, I guess, predictably, ultimately. I don't know, we could get into it in a second.
It's also, like, pathetically.
Yeah.
Tripwire, I mean, just to say, my take is very simple. Like, no one who plays Tripwire games is actually mad at this.
Right.
It's like, people who... The tweet, when it was still up, was, like, a usual suspects of, like, the shittiest Bay Area game journalists who are crying about it, and the shittiest shitlib game devs crying about it. None of the people who like play or make games for the Tripwire audience or the also I noticed that like a lot of people were like I'm never gonna play Man Eater again or Man Eater, what a shame I can't play it again. No one was ever like I'm never playing Red Orchestra again. Because like Maneater was like their kind of their broad appeal game, but
right,
like they're not basically they didn't lose any of their base with this, and they never will because people who play like Red Orchestra don't play video games; they play Red Orchestra, you know.
Yeah,
like, and that's like I think called Killing Floor too, Killing Floor as well. They didn't have to fold. They wanted to fold, and it's a very small company. They could have just kept on chugging. And
yes,
comparable studios have made comparable remarks, like studio heads, and just kept making games. What was the one that made Chivalry? Not
Shipwright. Oh, sorry. No. What do you mean?
Was it Chivalry or the one where you're in Bohemia, the hyper-realistic...
Oh, the Arma guys.
They're in Bohemia. Not Bohemia.
Oh, you mean the one with the RPG? Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah. Age.
That
no.
guy was,
yeah.
like, I don't like... he's like, there were no... He's like...
Yeah, there were no... right.
There were no black people.
Yeah, so which is, like, you know, historically true, and people were butthurt, and it all just kind of went away because nobody cared, and they were a small enough studio that... Yeah. We should. I haven't played that. But it's a good excuse to do an episode.
I mean, if you like tripwire games, that's a tripwire-y tripwire. It's not a tripwire game, but it's very tripwire-y.
Right.
I played the game for like a couple hours. I was losing fist fights to people. the combat mechanics are very deep, and they show you like the few difficult fist fights to kind of like get used to them. But I was just not good. I couldn't parry, and I was just.
Unsurprising. Yeah. I know they were going for realism. There's like no magic, and it's all supposed to be hyper realistic, which is.
They had a really good, what was the tagline? Dungeons and No Dragons.
Yeah.
But like basically, I think the company was soft.
I think the guy was soft. I mean, that's the thing is like.
He does seem a little soft.
He seems like a nice guy. He looks kind of like a, you know, regular. Conservatar boomer type. Interestingly, I guess his banner photo on his Twitter is him in, I guess, some kind of African village where there's like, I guess probably his wife is like holding a little African baby, and the only other white, there's like four African children around a tree. The wife is holding a baby. There's, I guess, the African mom or grandmom or I don't know exactly in the village, and then there's like some kind of employee of his, I guess, who's extremely fat with like 2/3 blue, 1/3 purple hair, female, or whatever, you know, I presume it identifies as a she, her. So, I mean, at a certain level, it's like, you know, that's what we're dealing with. I mean, it's not, I don't begrudge him going to Africa and helping people, I guess, but.
I mean, I do, but I think like, he didn't realize that like, you're kind of on like a war footing right now.
And this is interesting. So in the past couple of days, because before, like, even after he had initially stepped down, his Twitter bio still read president of Tripwire. Now it reads, currently full-time philanthropist, continuing helping the poor and underprivileged of the world, including orphans and widows. It's not going to win you any points, my guy.
Yeah. These people, like, you don't, I think, I mean, it's hard to tell if it's boomerism, but I don't know. It just... Like you can't support. Like, you know what you're getting into, and if you don't, shouldn't have been. Like,
I don't think he did know. That's the thing, and I still don't think he really gets it. And that's what I was gonna say is like to any of our guys probably anyone listening to this has already understood this, but if you haven't, and also if you know anyone you know is coming up in some kind of an impasse like this, you must make them fire you. Never step down. Never resign. Never quit. It doesn't help. It doesn't do anything. All it does is give them a stronger hand, especially if you're inclined to pursue any kind of legal action. But even if you aren't, like, you make their lives 10 to 100 times more difficult by forcing them to fire you, by forcing them to get rid of you. Like, that, they don't, like, what they want is for you to leave of your own accord, even if they're quote unquote forcing you to, like, for you to, you know, submit the resignation. Never submit the resignation. Never do that paperwork. Make them fire you. And he, for whatever, that's the part that I guess he didn't want to, like, cause a stink or something, or maybe it was, you know, if he was one of the, essentially a co-founder.
I think Banner Studios said they were going to stop publishing working with them. And I think he really, like, didn't want to hurt the company, because I'm a company man, I'm a stupid boomer, you know.
Yeah.
I love the company. It's also tiresome.
It really is, and you know, people need to be disabused of the idea that this, you know, like, but I mean, I get wanting to be loyal to people who have been good to you in the past, but
they're big bad to you now. You don't. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I guess we should read his statement. I mean, it's just, I don't know. But by now you have heard of my exit as CEO of Tripwire Interactive. To the many fans, friends, and peers across the belief spectrum, spectrum that have reached out to offer care and support, thank you. It means more than you can imagine. For those upset about my exit, I encourage you to continue your support of Tripwire and their many amazing partners. Please know that the owners and executive team of Tripwire have acted with class, professionalism, and have treated me well with great care and dignity, and I will forever be grateful for this. It has been blah, blah, blah. But yeah, the interesting thing to me, or one of the more interesting things about this whole episode to me, and this speaks to your point, Lewis, for sure, is at no point was his tweet expressing support for the Texas law, which doesn't exactly ban abortion. I don't want to get into the minutiae necessarily here, but it's a little more complicated than that. But I mean, let's say that that's what it does more or less functionally. At no point was it ratioed, which for those of you who haven't been on Twitter a while don't know, is like basically like it's an observed kind of social phenomenon on Twitter that the worst takes, or at least the ones that sort of like, it's a measure of negative attention that when your replies exceed your likes, because basically like it's marginally more effort to write even a one word reply, like, you know, dumbass or something in a reply than it is to just click.
N.
Yes. It's just another, you know, of course this is a great thing to do if you can on Twitter. But like replying more often than not is, especially with these kind of tweets, is a measure of disagreement or dunking on the person making the tweet. And liking is also comparatively, you know, it's like Skinner box thing is like you click the heart and the heart expands, and it's very simple and a very like easy thing. We're just
like
replying.
Exhaling.
Sorry?
It's like exhaling. It's like, huh?
Yeah, right. So what this ends up creating is a situation where like you can basically measure how in the average, and this is like, sometimes you'll see like right wing stuff will get quote unquote ratioed, where the ratio most like the basic measure of a ratio is, does it exceed 1-to-1? That is, do you have one like more replies than likes in absolute terms? But the you know the like sometimes you'll see two or three, a ratio of two or three replies for every like. You know, the worst takes sometimes get upwards of like, I've seen 10-to-1 for some truly heinous takes. And I would say, I don't know how it is now because I'm not on Twitter anymore. And I know basically, you know, all interesting discourse, especially anything remotely right-wing, has been pushed off. But typically it would be like some journalist saying something extremely stupid or ignorant, just kind of reflexively left-wing, and then just getting dogpiled by not even our guys, just like even normal people be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're an idiot. I saw this was another reason, you know, as a side note on this, on a recent development, Brian Stelter, I guess, was the first to receive Twitter rolled out a feature that's like journalist mode. Did you see this?
I heard the phrase and I thought it was satire.
No, it's not satire. I mean, that's not what they're calling it. That it has some official name, but basically it's like if the AI algorithm determines like this person like basically has AI level protections built in where like certain people are not able to make certain like replies as a matter of course like to these person's tweets, and they're kind of like,
you're just like the Mike Cernovich muzzle.
I think they call it auto blocking. It's like basically like if the AI determines that you're likely to you know, say something mean to this person or pointing out that they're an idiot, like you're preemptively blocked on the user interface side by Twitter before Brian Stelter ever has a chance to block you. So that's where that hit the level. And for a while they turned off because they noticed that like retweets, you could like quote, one way to get around some of this auto moderation, AI moderation stuff was by retweeting your snarky take rather than replying. So they turned off replies for a while and you could only quote tweet. And yeah, they have all this stuff, and it inevitably fails because like, you know, what it was, some kind of who's iron. I don't know if it has a name, but there's an iron law of the internet where, you know, any, essentially the more open and unmoderated a space is, the more right wing it's going to be just by nature. So I have seen, occasionally you'll see leftist dogpiling on a right wing take, but mostly the overwhelming majority of the time you'll see the reverse. And here it was noteworthy to me that as much controversy and as much of a lightning that this generated and as much of a lightning rod as it was for, you know, shitty Winance to talk about, you know, my body, my bodily autonomy, blah blah blah, he was never ratioed. This tweet was never ratioed. I started paying attention to this particular tweet of his when it was like about 1,000 replies to about 2,000 likes, and the ratio is
like, yep, 30 blue checks in the replies.
Oh, they're all over it. Yeah, they were all over it. But as it stands, it's like 14.4 thousand replies to 18.9 thousand likes. and with 9.1 thousand retweets. And retweets tend to be split between between like, you know, people dunking and people praising at a minimum. It's not unpopular.
I wonder how the news went over in like the clan chats for Red Orchestra. Did like Prussian Blue 86 really disagree that much with this take?
Right. Right.
Tripwire, like in a world where like there wasn't like an HR department and all this like shitlib flexing, Tripwire could be like denying the Holocaust and they wouldn't see a sales slump.
That would be funny if there was like a little like Easter eggs and, you know, you could imagine a paper scrap or something in Red Orchestra, like just a little environmental object.
It's like all the NPCs are named Gamar Rudolph.
Yeah, and the audience would either not most of the audience wouldn't care, and the biggest fans would mostly be like, that's fucking awesome, that's based, good for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, beyond what we've said so far, I don't know, like, the one additional point that I wanted to make, which isn't exactly about gaming, but it is sort of like, well, first of all, this is just a vindication of Gamergate and the whole, you know, like, the Gamergate has never ended. Gamergate just became what we're dealing with now.
In many ways, Gamergate was the 9/11 of gaming.
That's going in the... yeah, I'm putting that in the show description, I think. But yes, exactly. And we're just dealing with the aftermath still.
We live in a post-Gamergate world, you know?
The thing is, like... Okay, I have seen in my personal life, and not so much online, interestingly, but I've seen takes to the effect of like, you know, I'm against abortion, and I'm even okay with like heartbeat bills or bills that restrict abortion as of, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, whatever. But I don't like this Texas law because essentially it incentivizes snitching. Like in some abstract sense, I get that, but like, that's an extreme novelty take. Like the
sounds like a Federalist writer,
right? So like, that's pretty much what it was. The thing is like
the eternal Federalist.
the thing is like, for the most part, like your feelings of, there's very, very few people, even people who are like, because the law, okay, you can say like, oh well, you know, most people who aren't, you know, most people who, like, there's going to be some people who, as of their seventh week of pregnancy, are not necessarily aware that they're pregnant. I mean, file that under problems I don't give a shit about. But like, okay, you can, there's a tiny, tiny sliver of people who are broadly in favor of abortion restrictions, but the thing is, this bill isn't even really, it's not a full ban even, and it doesn't, you know, it's not even close. Yeah,
I don't want to discuss the minutiae of like the snitching thing, because like abortion dialogue is like kind of silly in my opinion. It's, you think it's murder or it's not,
right? Well, that's exactly my point.
To do it in like a sentence, you're against murder, therefore you're against abortion. Therefore, who cares if you snitch? Like, there should be murder snitch rewards, too.
Right. In fact, there are. Shit,
there's not. Yeah.
What do you think Crime Stoppers is? Exactly.
Yeah, it's like at the crack fund for snitches. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, the crack fund for snitches.
Yes, that's pretty much what it is. But, the point I'm trying to make here is, like, there's a few extreme edge cases, I guess, but for the most part, pretty much everybody who's like against abortion as an ideological matter is going to be in favor of this law, which is roughly half the population, give or take. I mean, you know, abortion is broadly unpopular. It's nowhere near as popular as it is among like the intellectual and media classes. It's, you know, the support has broadly been coming down. Like, yes, it's true that there's a kind of like, The median position is something like, you know, we don't want elective abortions after 3 months at the most, and probably closer to about 20 weeks. So, you know, you can wrangle over some of those details, but pretty much everybody who's against abortion, even if you would in the abstract in principle favor like a more of a 12 or a 20 week ban than more of like a 6 week ban, you're not going to like counter signal Texas on this, right? Which means like functionally the position of roughly half the country at least is like unmentionable in polite society, or at least this certain circles of polite society, and gonna get you fired from your job, which that is an escalation. That is not, to my knowledge, that was not really that. That wasn't true a year ago or 6 months ago, and I don't know like how much of it is. It's just an interesting phenomenon to me, not again directly connected to the gaming industry per se. I wonder how this would have played in some other kind of an industry. I imagine it would have gone pretty much the same. Like, I guess it's now not something you're like the regime, you know, Zog essentially is so, you know, in favor of killing babies that like you are not allowed to be anywhere near the levers of power, any kind of position of power or real power or influence, not even a, you know, mid-sized game developer, CEO type position. If you counter signal Zog on the issue of killing babies, which like, that came as something of a surprise to me. I'm not going to lie. Like, I mean, yes, okay, maybe he didn't have to strictly sip down, or maybe, you know, Tripwire could have ridden out the storm. I think Chivalry 2 is doing pretty well, so I guess they didn't want to lose the financial, you know, connection with the Shipwright, the developers of Chivalry series. But also, like, who cares? You know, I mean, what? So I don't know. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I kind of like it's. It's also, I think we all knew it. I was coming, you know. I don't really, I mean, the guy cucked and it's what he does, and I don't really care. Yeah, I kind of want to change gears because I think we actually brought up in the last show, but that China ban is pretty fucking cool.
The China,
it's,
which China ban?
Like, so
video games. Yeah, I don't know that we mentioned it. I don't know that it had, I don't remember. It's been a while since we did a GamerCore. And yeah, for those of you who don't remember, or if we didn't mention it, or if you haven't heard, the China ban is extremely based. China, in the past, I don't know, 2 weeks or so, basically, like, it only applies to minors. Am I correct in that? But it's, if you're a minor, if you're under 18, basically you cannot play video games except for 1 hour per day over the weekend. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you get 1 hour per day, 3 hours total per week. And you're only permitted to play. It's not even just that it's like 1 hour at any point. It's you're literally only, as a minor, permitted to play video games between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m., which is fucking based and awesome. And as much as I would have hated it as a kid, that's exactly the right policy.
What's more based is that this is going to like save single-player games. Because the only way this thing works is through... So China has very aggressive... If you're very like... crypto, you're familiar with like KYC, which like know your customer. For like Coinbase, you have to give them your ID and they verify it with your phone number and stuff, so they know who's on Coinbase so the IRS can tax you. China does the same thing for online gaming. Now obviously for like offline, not effectively offline, like DRM free single player games, there is no KYC, so the Chinese market is by necessity going to pivot towards games that aren't locked into this kind of time lock stuff, and I think it's gonna probably, there's a good chance this like single player gaming becomes huge in China as a result, and this then pushes it out to the rest of the world. And also it makes it, you, this also applies to games that are always online, that are, you know, like your kind of you know, all your kind of like fee to pay stuff, your like infinite, your app store games where you buy all this stuff. So yeah, I think you're gonna see a market for like discrete single package, single player experiences, because Chinese kids aren't gonna like. I mean, not, yeah, I'm sure they're gonna go outside, whatever. They're still gonna want to play video games, and they're not gonna want to play it in this 3 hour window. And I don't think the Chinese government really cares if you like download, you know, Mario Maker or whatever on your Switch and play. Like, I think this will be a kind of a boon to the single player games worldwide.
Because I think they care. I mean, I think they care in terms of the policy goal, which is, you know, get kids not to play video games so much for a variety of reasons. But I would say that, like, so I don't know that, I mean, it'll all kind of have to be, I guess, to some extent, under the radar. The thing is, though, and I do think that there's something to you when you're talking about in terms of the single player aspect, like multiplayer games, and I've noticed this for myself, like it's a treadmill and there's really no point, and it can be fun. It is fun, but it's just a treadmill. It's not, you're accomplishing even less ultimately than you would be playing a single player game. Not only that, like, you're not even accomplishing, as you said, like, people don't play video, you know, people like the people who play Red Orchestra don't play video games, they play Red Orchestra. One of the first things that I saw in terms of like, you know, play, you know, people have the backlog, I have a backlog, everybody has a backlog, you know, it's a common phenomenon. One of the first pieces of advice I was looking at it this one time where they were saying basically, like, stop playing online multiplayer games. Like, even if you want to consume more video game content, like, playing multiplayer, online multiplayer is counter to even that goal. So, like, yeah, I mean, I do think also that, you know, your ego can get wrapped up in your standings on the online leaderboard or whatever, or the, you know, just the, it can be, or and frequently is, more unhealthy both individually and societally than just normal single player games. You hear a lot of cases of, wasn't there a couple cases, or at least one case I remember, of a Korean kid that, like, essentially died after dehydration because he played World of Warcraft for like 3 days straight without eating or drinking. You see a lot of people, you know, kids especially, have these kind of problems with, especially MMORPGs and Fortnite. To foreshadow, we're going to want to talk a little bit about Apple versus Epic, or Epic versus be Apple. I've never heard of a case of someone playing a single player game so much that they, like, you know, died. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In worst case scenario, you're sending death threats to Bungie, and, you know.
Right.
Or BioWare. So, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's worse things. You know, maybe get a little Fed posty about, you know, oh, you killed off my favorite character, but.
Right. Whatever. That's quite a different thing than, yeah.
Let's be honest. I actually, you know, I rephrase that because Kristen Weston Chandler. big single player game player. So I guess that's probably the worst it can go.
I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But yes, no, I mean, I of course, I take your point. No, that's hilarious. Did you have more than that, or do you want to talk a little about Epic VR?
I just want to say that's like kind of what I think it's not going to – I thought China does this thing where they like kind of do these fake outs where they try to incentivize, which I think like a fascist country should do, which they are. Is they don't actually do regulations because it's like they understand that it's hard to be a command economy. So they'll do this thing where they threaten regulations and then right. The companies themselves will self-regulate as a result.
Yep.
And I thought this was going to be this, but they're going for it with this, I think. You know, they're doing – that's part of a whole host of like, you know – masculinization tactics, you know.
There's been a couple of these.
It seems like it's like a reform package.
They like basically they banned simping, and they banned also
effeminate men.
Yeah, people who are men who are presenting overly feminine from like appearing on TV at all, which is like based.
Which is great because also like it really shoves like U.S. conservatives' face in it, where like oh, it's for the freedom to, and who draws the line of who's too effeminate? And it's like, well, it's we just pick a guy, he'll do it. You know, like pick a random guy, and he'll draw the line, and it was, he'll do it case by case, and I'll know it when I see it. And,
right.
You know, like it's just so very like refreshingly anti-liberal to watch.
Yes.
That you can't help but root for it to succeed.
Much like the Taliban, right?
Yeah. And also, like, I wonder if you're going to have to see, like, because, like, the Pajits are kind of eternally doing, like, keeping up with the Changs. Where,
yeah.
And I think, I see both, because both cultures have, like, deep anti-liberal threads.
Yes.
You know, and I wonder if this would, like, set off a competing, like, masculinity push in Asia, which would be interesting to watch, you know, because, like, I know the Indian government has certain, like, very anti-liberal, like, they have a lot of, like, IQ tests and
BJP, the current, like, so yeah, well, part of why the Modi freaks out liberals so much, both in India and in the United States, is the BJP, his party, is a basically direct descendant of the RSS, which was, like, proto-Hindu nationalist, like very much a kind of, like, in that 1920s...
Was that Sandra Bose?
Sorry?
Was that Sandra Bose?
I don't know who Sandra Bose...
The guy who went off and ended up... He was the anti... Like, the... He's like the Malcolm X figure versus Gandhi, the guy who joined the fucking SS.
No, I don't know about that, but they were like the RSS was it was founded in 1925, but it was very much a part of like the same kind of stuff that was happening in Italy and Germany, etc. They were banned by the British, and so they're basically a right wing religious nationalist thing, and they essentially survive in as the BJP, more or less. There's some people who would disagree, but whatever, it doesn't matter. Yes, everybody kind of understands that they're the BJP is the kind of like soft sanded edges. You know, we sand some of the edges off this. We like, we're okay with democracy. We're gonna do the, you know, parliamentary thing. We're not gonna, you know, do the 1920s fascist thing quite as explicitly. So yeah, I mean, it's not even just like theoretical in India's case. It's very much like this is what is popular in India, to the point that the prime minister who's in power is in power for these reasons, right? So yeah, I agree. It's an interesting thing to watch for sure. And as America's star declines, and the Taliban paints over murals of groid fentanyl, you know, it's definitely something to watch as a development and something for us. I don't think there's any problem. Like, you know, we say like, okay, they're Chinese. They're going to do, you know, they can go be Chinese over in China. You know, we're white people. We're going to be white people over here in Western civilization. That doesn't mean that, you know, if China does a policy that we like, that we think is, you know, pro-social and beneficial to us, there's I don't think anything wrong with us saying like, yeah, sure, why not? That's, you know, to say nothing of Vietnam or Korea or Japan or whoever, India, whoever else, you know, we ourselves can I think take some cues from the Chinese on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think obviously the, you know, it's, I also like the idea that the state can't like influence behaviors, retarded, like
right, you're right, implying they don't in a million ways already. Yes, but I did want to talk. Sorry, okay, was that really it, or did you have more on that?
So Dota is interesting. It's a game, but its big thing is that it's very like a lot of clicking and a lot of like Twitch reaction stuff. And there's actually like an age ceiling where like players start to like around 22, 25 begin to like age out of being a competitive Dota player, minus some very special cases. And I wonder if the Chinese competitive Dota scene is going to be destroyed.
Because I'm sure it will.
A professional starts.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean,
13,
I,
14.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have to be like young. I mean, you 16. Need those. Exactly. You need those like mid to late teen ager Twitch reflexes, even for what's nominally, is Dota considered a strategy game? I know, like, I guess
it's a, what is it, arena,
whatever, MOBA.
MOBA, yeah.
Even for like actual strategy, I mean, even to an extent for things that are more, you know, less focused on actions per minute, like Company Heroes, you still need Twitch reflexes. You still need all that kind of stuff. And the best players, yes, in part because they, unless the government prevents them, they tend to have more time on their hands. But it's definitely also a reflexes issue.
Yeah. I wonder if there's going to be a professional like team, like a state, a pro team, like where they're, hey, like the Chinese does feeder system for athletes,
right?
In like traditional Olympic sports, if they're going to like find the best underground Dota player, and instead of like putting him in detention or whatever, they send him to the secret Dota school to, you know, win the world championship. But that'd be a good movie. But No. Also, I don't think like people have this idea of China like holocausting the gamers or whatever. Like the Chinese government does isn't Rick retarded. Like they do things because they know people will VPN around these things and all this kind of stuff. But they put the disincentive out there.
Right.
And also because the Chinese state has a certain amount of like cultural cachet in China, people will want to comply because it's like the patriotic thing.
Right. Yes.
So you know, I think it's like kind of like an unqualified good in a lot of ways. Also, like there's whole kinds of like horrifying like gray markets around like selling exploits and like using people to farm resources in Asia that this can only like help ameliorate, you know,
mm-hmm.
farming WoW gold or for real world money in like the Philippines, and the demand for that stuff's coming out of China and the U.S. So, you know, this is almost an unqualified good. It looks like they're not going to back down. So I'm happy about that for sure.
Cool. Sorry, I think that you dropped out for a second, but it's fine. It worked out. Did you have more on that, or...?
No. I kind of wanted to go on how, like... It's, like, kind of a pack thing at this point, but, like... I guess we gotta say they made like, a Norse god, like a... some kind of sub-Saharan again in God of War, but...
What? Like, this is...
It's all... I don't care.
Like, yeah, I mean...
I expected this. You like Norse mythology. Wow.
Yeah.
And of course the best thing is because like Norse mythology, every like there's like somebody, you know, every Norse mythology is like very deep. It varies greatly region to region, so you can always find stories of like this god behaving in some like stupid or hilarious or evil way. And I saw like the absolute wokest brothers in Tariq Nasheed's comment saying like, this goddess gave birth to all the evil monsters of the world, and she's a black woman. It's like, huh. I mean, you're not wrong. I'm sure it is. Like, and that's, I don't even know how true that is. And I honestly, even as someone who's like into a certain amount of like LARP pagang stuff occasionally, I'd never heard of this one of Loki's wives or whatever. Like, whatever. I like, it's also tiresome. I don't care. I can't muster the outrage. Except for to laugh at it. It's like, whatever, you know? Like, yeah, like, the games are made of people who, like, don't like me, so I don't play those kind of games unless I'm stealing them.
So. Oh, yeah, we'll have to do... You suggested that, and we'll have to do a piracy episode at some point, and...
Yeah. I have a system of ethical piracy.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not going to... No spoilers, but, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a teaser for future content. Yeah, I don't know what else is... I mean, you know, that's... I guess, as you say, predictable. And the thing is, to me, like, God of War is a... I don't know. We'll see. I was... to me, God of War exists as God of War 1 and 2 on the PlayStation 2. Everything else is kind of just, like, whatever. I mean, it can be a good time, but those are really the only ones that I really feel are... So it's like, okay, and you know, it's a relatively complete... Even just the first one is pretty much just a complete arc by itself, and even the sequel for the things that it did well. Like, we should do a God of War episode, I guess, at some point. But yeah, it's not like, anyone's missing essential anything by not playing the latest God of War, is implying that it's some kind of hugely important series when, you know, it's kind of been on life support for a while anyway. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll do this more with other stuff. There wasn't, I don't think, much of that in the, I know the Assassin's Creed did an Ancient Greece stuff, an Ancient Greece title, and I don't think there was really, they didn't do like Socrates was black, yo, so much, I don't think.
It was a little too early for that, too.
Right.
Okay,
I want to talk about Epic versus Apple, because I don't know, maybe there isn't a whole lot to say.
I realize it gets a lot funnier of a story.
Yeah.
Really quick.
Yeah.
So, are you familiar with the Sonic Colors scandal?
Okay, I saw this trending for some reason. I had absolutely no idea why. I assumed it had something to do with Chris Jan, but no.
It doesn't.
Okay.
But I'm sure he has strong opinions. I'm writing him a letter now in the penitentiary. I want to get him to weigh in. But, so, some, like, Let's Players, I guess, basically, it's all Sonic Colors. There's It's apparently a Sonic game. Sonic hasn't been good in like a while, I don't think. But some people are big Sonic fans because of, you know, either, you know, fetal alcohol syndrome or whatever. But these Let's Players were basically running it on through some kind of an emulator to like create glitches to like say, oh, because Sonic games are like notoriously pieces of shit. Recently, they like to farm out to like B tier studios of B tier studios, and so I think I'm not even gonna say the name because I don't want to promote it, and also because I'm too lazy to look it up. But they were basically running an emulator on the game and like inducing like epilepsy mode all the time.
When you say epilepsy mode, like what is that? What do you mean?
Like they were fucking with how they did something where like. There's like the way that like lighting interacts with like how light reflects and stuff, and I believe they had basically they damaged, like they did a bunch of like weird stuff with the color palette and then made like it flash constantly because of like how the lighting worked, which I'm sure is like I might be butchering that, but just like constant colors swapping brightly.
It wasn't like an actual software glitch in the game itself.
They were just inducing it. Yeah, they were inducing it through these emulation software.
And Sega was like, our program is shitty, but it's not that shitty. Oh.
No. Well, that's not what happened. So they were like, yeah, we notoriously do shitty programming in Nintendo, because it was intended on the Nintendo like eShop only or something like that, because of COVID, like games aren't doing physical sales a lot. So Nintendo took the extraordinary step, because like they were like, oh, fucking, they fucked us again. Fucking Sega. They shit out another terrible Sonic game. And they basically opened it for refunds. Like, you can 100% refund the game. And then, after a bunch of people bought it, because they're Sonic fans, and they have fetal alcohol syndrome, and they had to buy a Sonic product, they saw this returned Sonic product, and they were hoodwinked, because actually, Sonic product is, if not good, like, not an epilepsy machine.
So, is there, like, a lawsuit or something, or is this just, like, the Sonic...
I don't know. Can you sue a Let's Player for, like...
Right, like a misleading... Emails?
No, I don't really think you can.
That's funny.
So
Sonic fans are, like, they're... Oh, I don't know if we maybe have... can't imagine we have too many. It's a like, yeah, I know there's... I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't played a Sonic game since, I think, Sonic Adventure 1 on the Dreamcast. And, the last time Sonic really came to my attention was there was some insane, I think it was for like Xbox or Xbox 360, like a kind of like where Sonic basically had a 3D waifu for some reason, and it was just universally panned. I'm sure the fans with fetal alcohol syndrome will know what I'm talking about. Sonic deserves... I mean, obviously, we're going to have to do Mario and Zelda at some point. Sonic, I think, as a cultural object, deserves its own episode, too, but for, like, completely different reasons. Because, I mean, I understand that people who like Sonic games, there have been a couple ones recently that have been at least okay, but it seems to be one of these things that Sega or whoever is just milking in a bizarre way, and what's even more bizarre and inexplicable is like people keep buying them. I just don't understand. So yeah, I don't know.
Sonic games are like I would even say like never really great. They kind of just work a different kind of a Mario.
If that makes sense.
Like the 2D Sonic games, fun to play and look at, but they don't have like the depth of the staying power of like a, you know, any Mario game ever, probably.
Right.
It's almost like a console wars like a hangover that I think people are still Sonic fans. Like,
I mean, I get what you're saying, but how many of these kids are even like? How many of those kids even grew up with like the Genesis versus Super Nintendo thing? I mean, like I did, but
there's a non-zero percentage of kids who probably got in through it to like Tumblr pornography.
That's what I was going to say, is like the furry thing, I think, is the bigger entry point.
Yeah. It's also the one that says, did that like start the furry stuff? and then it's like kind of a perpetual furry machine.
God, I don't even want this. Is making me like
make new Sonic
like my
fans.
Skin crawl. Like thinking, oh my god. So Sega's basically. So what you're saying is Sega's profiting off furrydom.
I mean, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's that in Total War, right? That's all I got.
Oh my god.
I mean.
Yeah, so that's yeah. Funny. I don't know, like how. Yeah.
It was a great scam. I only have a Twitter for like cryptocurrency stuff anymore, but because of like I think like previous browsing habits and like Google owning your entire life and selling it to Twitter, like I still get recommended these tweets. I don't even follow them anymore, but I still get like latest. And I spent this one took me down the rabbit hole of like what's this like? People are pissed. Like they're demanding legal action
against the streamers or the Let's Play people.
Yeah.
Because they got hooked. Like, but can't you just... Okay, wait. What's the damage? Like, so they say, like, oh, I... Or they don't... They're like, I, on behalf of giant corporation that makes product that I consume, I am offended that the integrity and the honor of product has been besmirched. And this affects me psychologically because I have fetal alcohol syndrome. Like, my self-identity is, like, wrapped up in the reputation of Sonic. Is that, like, the argument?
Well, I think the argument is that, like, they did Nintendo and Sega damage, but also, like, Nintendo, by... They basically damaged the sales of the game by allowing people to return it.
Under what amounts to false pretenses.
But, like, they could just buy it again.
I was going to say, like, okay, you just buy it again.
But the thing is, like, I mean, if so you stupid. Already... borrowed your parents' credit card.
Oh yeah, right. So yeah.
And I mean, how many times a 25-year-old get his parents' credit card per month? Like, I have no sympathy for Sonic fans. Like, you're in a hell of your own making. You know, it's a hell of their own making. It really.
It's not even. There's tons of cool 2D platformers.
You know, there's a systemic critique. Actually, I think it's systemic. I can't blame them individually.
Because there's enough of them that you have to ask, like, what went wrong? Yeah. Like, what are we doing wrong as a society that we're producing Sonic fans?
Like, at a certain point, like, where did DeviantArt come from? Like, right. You know, I'm sure. Yeah, so there's that. So yeah, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to do. Like, current events, because
sure,
yeah, the pro-life
sure.
thing, and
you know, yeah, like, I saw it. I was honestly, I like,
this
I saw
way better.
I saw Sonic and kind of just checked out. Like, I saw that it was like some kind of Sonic story, and I was like, all right, I don't know, whatever. But this is way funnier than I thought it would be. For
Sonic
sure,
Sonic fans are mad. It's like the women be shopping. It's like, yeah, you're kind of it's like a hack joke at this point, but it's always true.
Yeah, I mean, just play literally anything else. Or I mean, there's tons. I'm sure, like, the back catalog, you know, like, the... I mean, you can buy Sonic collections on Steam for, like, $10, and...
Like, there's, like, 8 Sonic games a year for the last 30 years. Like, there are probably 10 great ones that I have no idea about. But they're right. Probably out there.
Oh, man. So... Okay, well, I don't want to stay too much longer, but as I kept saying, I did want to. But then as I keep saying it, like, I don't know how much. So basically, Epic won. I mean, Apple gets to box out other competitors in, like, they're not going to be legally obligated to allow you to download and install apps on the iPhone. An iPad from anywhere other than the official Apple App Store, but they are no longer the core of the dispute, which is why I've been kind of confused by some of this the reporting to the effect of, like, you know, Apple won. I mean, their shares were down 3.5%, which I think tells you pretty much who the market thinks won. And the core of the dispute was essentially, like, the reason the sort of main claim was, I mean, there's all this stuff about antitrust and blah blah blah, but the kind of the technical side of it was that I've literally never played Fortnite, and I guess I'm revealing my age a little bit there too, but I've literally never played Fortnite. As I understand it, Fortnite has in-game cash that you buy more of it and you get, like, a better deal essentially, and The problem from Epic's perspective and kind of generally was on the Epic Store and on Windows and I think even on Xbox and elsewhere, they have some kind of bespoke agreement with the, you know, like Sony for if you buy it on the PlayStation, but it amounts to a standard-ish cut of something like 10% or 15% or something like that. With Apple, Apple demanded the like 30% that they get from developers on the App Store, period, and they didn't allow, like, because Epic essentially started inserting some kind of link or advertisement, I don't know what exactly, but a way for you to buy the Fortnite in-game cash through the Fortnite app, bypassing the Apple App Store, and therefore Epic gets to keep everything instead of the 30% that would go to Apple. That's when Apple said, okay, well, you breached your contract, we're removing your app, and then that's when Epic sued. And so with respect to this most particular issue of like, is Apple allowed to prevent you from like advertising ways to purchase things outside of the official Apple App Store? The answer is no. Apple cannot do that, and that's the injunction. Of course, it's all been appealed. It was always already going to be appealed. But for me, like, looking at this, trying to, like, you know, see it from a bird's eye view as much as I can, like, I always thought that was the strongest part of their case. It's true that, like, you know, because Apple's arguments essentially come down to, number one, we're not a classic monopoly because you have, like, you can go buy an Android or whatever. So we're not really a monopoly. And I think that's true, as much as they're kind of in certain ways functionally one. And the judge did acknowledge that. She's like, well, you know, the phrase that Apple used in their press release, success is not illegal. I was like, okay, fine. And that's true. They're not technically a monopoly. The thing is, though, that like the question of the walled garden, as they call it, of, like, basically, you know, when you're in the Apple iOS sphere, like, what are you going to be allowed to do, and what is this? I mean, this touched on, there was actually a point, I guess, in the arguments and in the decision where the judge, like, opined on, like, what is a video game? This was a question, because, like, she noted that neither Epic nor Apple had really even attempted to come up with a satisfactory definition, which I think touches on, you know, we brought this up on the show before, we'll bring it up again. Interestingly, she noted that basically, that at a bare minimum, video games appear to require some level of interactivity or involvement between the player and the medium. In other words, a game requires that a player be able to input some level of a command or choice, which is then reflected in the game itself. This gaming definition contrasts to other forms of entertainment, which are often passive forms enjoyed by consumers, film, television, music. Video games are also generally graphically rendered or animated, as opposed to being recorded live or via motion capture, as in films or television. Beyond this minimum, the video gaming market appears highly eclectic and diverse. So, I mean, I don't want to, like, this is maybe a grist for another mill another time, but it's interesting that she harps at it in the way that we have, is like, okay, what distinguishes ultimately, quote, video games or whatever you're going to call it, electronic entertainment or computer, whatever, from other forms of media, is this essential also, element of interactivity.
I love, like, these hilariously legally broad definitions where, like, Google Maps is a video game now.
Well, this was the problem they were having. It was like, well, what distinguishes Fortnite from other types of apps that you can download and install and run that you know, from the App Store and put on your iOS device? It's not a straightforward thing, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's she mentioned, like, it's interesting that she doesn't deal with the question of, because, like, okay, Apple Maps or whatever Maps has some kind of a, like, it's graphically presenting, right? Nobody uses, you know, even in a sense, like, text interfaces are graphical to the extent that they're, you still have to use your eyes, okay? You can, whatever. There's a whole rabbit hole you can go down there too, but, like,
you don't use, like, MapQuest in DOS and print it out, like,
right?
What are you, pleb?
Yeah. Just an extreme boomer. Yes.
Yeah. Level but, grognard MapQuest grognards.
But yeah, I mean, this idea of, like, I think it's the instantaneity of the interaction and the graphically rendered. Like, if it's not, well, what do you do with, like, text? Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough question. Like, what's Zork?
If I look around in Google Maps in, like, Europe to look at buildings, is that entertainment? But when I use it to get, like, directions to the grocery store, that's now, like, a utility. But it's, you know, it's a video game when I'm looking at a place I'm not going to. Just, it's like, is the function of my amusement what makes it a video game?
I think it has to be at some level. You have to have this. I know the pretentious people who do this kind of shit.
I just love that some lawyer had to, like, district judge had to, like,
weigh in on, like, what's a video game.
Pull out, like, the get on the stage, do a soliloquy, and, you know, really think deeply on this stuff.
The other thing that occurred to me.
I love Anglo law. It's great.
The other thing that occurred to me about this is, like, okay, well, with, like, walking simulators or maybe the best case, like, visual novels, like, is a visual novel without any. Like, if you can't actually
EPUB of a comic book video game?
Right. I mean, what's the difference between an EPUB of a comic book and a visual novel where you don't actually make any choices? Like, these are all kinds of, like, is there interesting questions. I don't want to, like, dwell too long on them now. It's just it's funny how this legal dispute touches on all these kinds of things, but yeah, back to the legal side of it. I always thought, like, it was unlikely to. Apple's not a monopoly, so as much as you or I or anyone might personally really have a problem with Apple and whatever, like, okay, they're not quite a monopoly, at least not yet. But that's clearly anti-competitive, and I always sort of was like, you know, to the extent that I have any boomer conservative type priors about wanting the system to, like, just be fair on a basic level, I was like, it was hard for me to understand how, like, you know, justice would not require a finding to the effect that Apple's behavior was extremely anti-competitive and unacceptable. And that is indeed what at least this level of the judicial system has found. I guess we'll see, you know, how that develops further on. But I wouldn't say heartened, just kind of like, okay, like, it's good to see that somebody has a sense of fairness. Yeah.
So also, I mentioned I get my video game news filtered through, like, crypto Twitter these days. And there were some absolute, like celebrations among, like, the Bitcoin crazy people, like the Bitcoin maxi types. And they were talking about, like, apparently there's some way you can read. So there was the judge also made some ruling on, like, what a currency is and what currencies have to be accepted.
Oh, yeah, right, because, like, what you're buying. Yeah, totally.
And apparently Bitcoin met, like, the requirements of being a currency under this judge's. Once again, this judge would, like, suffer and, like, imagine a definition for currency, like, internet money. And, like, I think this poor lady and her, like, staff were, like.
Can you imagine she's some, like, district judge in California? Like, I don't know shit about any of this. And, like, yeah, there was. I saw, like, in the trial phase, there were, like, because it would make the news occasionally in the gaming press of, like, just explain it like I'm five level of shit they had to do for this judge and the poor people, like, just trying, because, like, I don't even think the lawyers necessarily understood all that much, at least not at first. I mean, I'm sure they knew the legal side, but
define interface,
right?
Define graphic. It's like, oh god.
So yeah, and there were some funny moments of stuff like that, and I guess there was a one point where, what was it, apparently there's some kind of banana man in shorts that's like some kind of Fortnite skin or something, and
George Floyd.
I'm fucking dead. Anyway, so there was this exchange between the Apple lawyer and Epic marketing director Matthew Weisinger. Apple lawyer: we have a large yellow banana here in a tuxedo. Yes, that's Peely. After noting that Peely is wearing his son of George Floyd, we thought it was better to go with the suit instead of the naked banana because we are in federal court right now. Epic lawyer: there might have been an implication that showing Peely without a suit might have been inappropriate. Is there anything inappropriate? And then they show a picture of a naked Peely in the court. Is there anything inappropriate about Peely without clothes? To which the marketing director replies, quote, it's just a banana, ma'am.
I love that, like, we devised this system to prevent, like, duels among the English gentry.
Right.
And now they have to work out, use this system.
Like, is this banana naked, but he doesn't have a penis?
But, like, also, because, like, the system is used to, like, prevent death and murder, in theory, you have to, like, you can get subpoenaed.
Right.
To discuss the relative. Oh God, I love this country. Oh, this empire is gonna
It's a great place. Love it. We got the best. Like, we got the best courts.
Best empire.
We got the best empire. Empires,
don't we, folks?
Anyway, that's pretty much all I had on.
So much you'll get tired of giggling, and I'll say no. You have to giggle more.
Right. Yeah. Well, if you don't laugh, I mean, what are you gonna do? Like, don't take that as an invitation. Yeah. Well, you know. Anyway, so that this phase, I guess the initial court phase of that is over, and I didn't really have anything else. I just wanted. I think it was gaming news of note that touches on some interesting. Interesting issues, and that's about all I had. I think we touched on a lot more than I initially thought we would, which is good. It's good to get a little roundup like this. It's been a while. I know we've been off air for a little bit, but we appreciate your support, and just want to let you know everything's great. We're all good here and excited about our get excited for consuming next content for sure. Did you have anything else or
no? Because I can't shield the show because we're currently on the show, so it makes sense to shield.
Listen to the show that you're currently listening to. Yeah. More. Shill it to other people. I think I shilled it a little on TDS yesterday, and hopefully we'll get some new viewers and listeners. But I'm a little behind, actually. Maybe that's the thing I can do.
I don't know. Buy my Polygon coins. I've got a lot of them.
Whatever. Good night, Jonathan. Good night. Take care, everybody.
Dumb. Girls are dumb.